Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras. In this episode, we discover Sub-Zero AIO cooling from Cooler Master and Intel, and mourn the death of the high-end desktop processor. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain. As many of you know, the Hardware Asylum Podcast Extras is our chance to talk about things that are maybe not necessarily associated with tech, or something that is just really strange and cool.
Oh, I like that.
Well, I have something that's really strange and cool right here for another virtual unboxing over the radio.
Okay. So what am I looking at? I'm looking at a...
This is an AIO cooler. Now, okay. Before you freak out and tune us off, you know...
Master Liquid.
It's the Master Liquid from Cooler Master. But this one's special.
The ML360 Sub-Zero. Oh, wait a minute. Sub-Zero, that's below ambient.
That is below ambient.
So this thing has a active cooler? Really?
Yeah.
All right, now maybe this is worth tuning in. We've talked for, it seems like forever, about
TECs.
How we could get water cooling below ambient without having to hook it to the phase or something equally exotic.
Yeah. Well, you had a cooler that would do kind of below ambient, right?
Back in the day, the old Cool-It coolers, the Eliminator was my particular favorite because it used Peltier cooling, but it had an interesting cylinder design that seemed prone to failure as I'm opening this thing up here.
Oh, and this is a big box.
It is huge, which is amazing. Oh my gosh, it's huge inside too. Okay, what are we looking at here? We got...
We should talk about specs.
Okay.
Specs. So this is a TEC cooler. It's Intel.
All right. Here's the spec sheet.
Okay.
The crib sheet, if you will.
It's got a brand new pump design.
Okay.
And it comes with a 360 millimeter radiator, basically triple 120s.
Very nice. It's a thinner radiator, it looks like.
I believe that is actually their factory AIO radiator. That portion of the show is about the same.
All right, pulling it out. The radiator, at least. Okay, so it looks like their standard 360, so I don't see any changes here.
Yeah, we have the high-pressure fans.
Nice.
Which are good, because the radiator fins on the Cooler Master Liquids it's pretty dense, which is good for cooling, but you need a pretty powerful fan to make it work.
Very nice. Now everything is nice and black, so it kind of disappears into your case unless black. You want it to.
Black.
In which case, you can purchase, I'm sure, their beautiful ring fans.
Actually, Cooler Master has some really nice RGB fans. Multiple rings and lights everywhere. It's pretty darn cool.
Okay, so I'm struggling a little bit because unlike a standard all-in-one, this particular unit has two different pieces. So it's not just the piece that hooks onto the CPU, which is really large, but we have, it looks like, is that for video cards or memory or something?
I think that's the new pump.
All right, why don't you help me get that box out of the way here?
So good box.
It's a huge, huge thing. We get that out of the way. Okay, so what? All right, talk me through this, because that's huge. That's weird right. looking.
Well, don't tell her that you said that.
All right.
Ha, ha, ha. Okay, jerks.
So this...
What we have in front of us, we have our 360 millimeter radiator.
Right, okay.
Okay, we got a tube going into the pump block, or what would normally be the pump block. This is the TEC controller that is sitting on top of the cold plate.
So this thing's interesting because it has an 8-pin. It looks like power supply, and I see what looks like... USB, it might be proprietary. That must be for a control.
So the controller that you're looking at right now, that is going to accept power and probably a USB controller.
Looks like it.
The Intel system, this is designed for Comet Lake processors only. And the idea with Comet Lake is that we need to keep them cool so that we can keep them boosted. Well, we're feeding power into this block and the USB looks back at the machine to tell if the system is under load and what style of control you want to have over the TEC controller. That's a lot of words for the system controls the controller that keeps the processor cool.
So inside of this thing, and it's, maybe 4 inches tall, so it's a pretty good size considering that it's a CPU heatsink without the actual heatsink portion of the show. There must be at least one Peltier, right? It's got to be a Peltier.
Well, if you pull the plastic bit off the bottom, I'll let you take that part. I mean, literally, I've not used this. This is the first time I've seen this. I'm looking at the instructions right now.
Okay, I'll figure out what it tastes like real quick. Oh, wow. That's kind of neat looking.
Okay. So have you ever seen the bottom of a liquid nitrogen container? Well, that's what we have here.
Yeah.
So there is a big chunk of copper on the bottom and a basically an insulative shroud.
Yeah, it looks like it seals.
Yeah, that seals around, and it's got a little rubber gasket on it. So that is going to seal the CPU and prevent it from condensating, because this TEC in there should actually get the CPU to that point.
Okay. So...
And then if you look in between these two...
Okay. All right. Go ahead. It looks like copper... Oh, it's taken it like kind of like a pyramid shape to a much larger copper surface.
Yeah. So above that cold plate is going to be where the TEC is located. And that is... It's completely sealed in there, which is a good idea because, as we know, one side of it's going to get really hot and one side of it's going to get really cold. And the cold side is going to collect water, and you want to make sure the water is not there.
So it might be in vacuum, actually.
Yeah, probably. It's going to be sealed regardless. Well, anyhow, off of this block, because the water comes in and basically cools the CPU block that's above, well, we'll call it a TEC block. And then we have this third little dealy bob, and that's the pump.
Oh, that's a pretty small pump, but I had wondered about that. It makes a lot more sense that it would be the pump.
Yeah. And according to the instructions, we mount that anywhere we have a 120 millimeter fan location. So it can go and attach itself to the radiator. It can attach itself to just a fan opening or to the side of a case or whatever.
Yeah, but I like that you've got some flexibility. They've got a nice pad on here also to reduce vibration. Mm-hmm. And I like the idea of removing the fan from the actual cooling block.
Oh, you mean the pump?
Yeah.
That thing too.
Well, yeah, because you're isolating the moving parts and the heat of the pump away from the heat that you're trying to reduce from the CPU also.
Mm-hmm. Well, really, this turns into more of like a DIY style loop that's self-contained for the most part. You don't have the flexibility of making sure that this pump is really far away. It's got, you know, we have a definite hose length that we got to deal with here.
So let's talk about this thing, because it's got to be more expensive than their regular units because you've got this active cooling.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the cost is on this little guy, but according to Cooler Master, we do have a couple of limitations which are notable.
Oh, okay. Now that seems important, because I put the safety protection back on this.
I'm going to go to my email real quick, and this is from Cooler Master itself. Please note that the ML360 Sub-Zero is a collaboration between Intel and Cooler Master. Now, as I mentioned, this is designed mostly for the Comet Lake processor platform, which is had thermal problems because it's a small chip and it produces a whole lot of heat. This particular cooler is intended for single and dual core overclocking to achieve higher frequencies with lower voltages for performance gains. The intention is not for all core overclocking at max power for stress testing.
Okay.
So now, that is important to note, because while it may be able to handle a 10 core CPU, if we are going to be overclocking with it, it's not going to give us the same amount of performance as if we reduce the amount of heat going into the cooler by disabling more than half of the CPU.
So I know that that's pretty common for some overclocking efforts that are single or dual threaded. So I'm guessing that they must have a relatively significant limit on how much dispensation it does.
Because on the, well, I was looking at the specs on the side of the box. We know that the reason we didn't use TECs before was because you needed to have a separate power supply just to run them.
And they're finicky because they produce sometimes a tremendous amount of heat.
Well, unfortunately, Cooler Master doesn't publish how much power the TEC pulls, but the power consumption on the pump is 13.8 watts. And then, of course, we have the fans. When I was looking at some information on the EK version of this particular cooler, which is really it's a dedicated CPU block with the TEC and then an external controller same configuration, same everything. That one drew a tremendous amount of power to the point where they hooked up a separate power supply just to run it.
Wow, yeah. So this one is running off of a standard 8-pin, so we know that is not the case.
Yeah, it could be up to 200 watts.
Yeah, I'm always baffled when they don't put that on there. So that's going to, you know, require some testing on the bench at least to mm-hmm. see what we can do.
Well, obviously, we'll get this and we'll run it against a variety of different scenarios. It's intended for the LGA 1200 platform, and I'm wondering if it will actually run on like a 9900K or if the software is looking for that Comet Lake processor. So that'll be something to dive into and look in.
Well, I feel like it has great promise, even though this is a really limited implementation. It's nice to see water cooling trying to get back below zero again, or below ambient at least.
Well, and if they can do that with a TEC, that's great. There's two things I'm looking forward to when testing this particular cooler. One is obviously testing it in its intended configuration by disabling all but two cores in my 10900K. As we know, there's a couple of cores in the CPU that love to overclock. Those are the boost cores. They normally run at 5.3 gigahertz. And if we remove all the rest of the heat, we might be able to get those up to 5.5, 5.6, 5.7.
Ooh, sounds like cups again.
Well, at least with two cores.
Right.
And then having the CPU completely enabled and see not necessarily load testing, but just under normal gaming loads with this particular cooler, what are the temperatures? You know, we normally do a thermal test to see how much heat is being produced by the CPU and how effective the cooler is at removing that excessive heat. With this cooler having a TEC, maybe that will enhance that, or maybe it won't. I mean, we've had other air coolers with TECs on them that have been with a varied amount of success. Sometimes they work good and sometimes not so much.
Well, it's an intriguing design that makes me feel like there's a lot of potential here. I wonder if they are testing the water to see if it makes sense to do these for more platforms. Dennis, we've been talking a lot about overclocking in this extra, especially with below ambient overclocking, and in the main also. But I thought I'd ask you again, because you've mentioned it a couple times, but what is, you think, the best overclocking processor for the money right now?
For the money right now?
Yeah.
I don't know what kind of money you have, but one of my favorite overclocking processors is the Core i9-9900K.
Well, you know, you're not the only one. That's frequently cited as maybe the best overclocking processor, at least in the current generation.
Yeah, and it was a great gaming processor.
It is.
I mean, it had six cores. It was really all you needed, and it was fast.
Very versatile, very popular, and I'm sorry to tell you, Dennis, it's very dead.
Dead? Dead?
We have reached the end of life for that particular processor run. In fact, Intel has officially announced the end of life, and we've known about this kind of for a little while because it's been forecasted in life. But I think what makes it most interesting to me, Dennis, is I can't tell what's going to replace it.
Comet Lake is going to replace it, and which is weird because Comet Lake, for core-to-core performance or single-threaded performance, it was basically the same speed as the 9900K. The difference was an improved memory controller, so it can actually clock memory higher and faster, and it had a couple of extra cores and generated a whole lot of heat, and you need to make it cold and blah, 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 blah.
So why would you still pick the 9900K then if it sounds so much better on paper?
Because it was fun. It was a very predictable CPU to overclock. I had mine up to 6 gigahertz reliably for several hours. We set records with it at Hackfort. It's been a processor that I've used and abused, and it still takes it. It's strong, and it's fast.
So the modern equivalent, I guess we have to say, since this one is end of life, is the 10900K?
Yeah, 10900K, and there's a couple of other variants of that K Comet Lake processor, but its direct replacement was the 10900.
So if you are looking at overclocking now, does that make the Threadripper once again a viable product? Because we won't have the 9900K to compete against in that price point anymore.
Well, Threadripper never really competed with the 9900K or the 10900. That was more like the Ryzen, and it was some magical number of multiple cores and people going nuts over, oh my God, multi-threaded performance. But you bring up an interesting point about Threadripper, because I bought one.
Yes, I know.
I bought a Threadripper 3. It was awesome. I paid like $1,500 for it.
Ouch.
And I, in one of the podcasts, I talked about how I had to snipe to buy it because, you know, you sign up for the pricing notifications and then you get the alert and within 5 minutes they were all sold out.
Yeah, super hard to get.
But I did. I got one. And when I started testing it, it turned out to be kind of bad. It had a really weak memory controller. So I sent it back and I got a replacement. And then I got a total of 3 motherboards to review. I got some really cool G-Skill memory from G-Skill. I bought a water block for it so I didn't have to deal with special coolers. Although Noctua sent me some air coolers that were actually really quite good for the Threadripper despite the 28 cores of heat that came off of it.
That's impressive.
So not surprising, some of the hardware that I review ends up on the shelf. Some of the high-end video cards don't get really used that often because they don't fit in my main build. And certain processors only get used when new motherboards come in. And then, you know, like the 9900K, all of those Z390 builds have all gone onto the shelf because we're now on 10900K. Well, my $1,500 Threadripper, which is pretty awesome. I mean, Darren says, Threadripper, every time we talk about it. It was a difficult platform. We have a lot of cores to synchronize, so it doesn't overclock very well. And we look at some of my reviews, there's only like 300 or 400 megahertz of an overclock. And that's pretty bad in any sort of a CPU situation.
Well, we're talking about, like you said, a $1,500 processor. So if it's not great for overclocking and it's challenging for high-end applications, then what really is the target market for this thing? I'm not sure I get it.
Well, the target market is the workstation genre. Now we have the Trux 40 motherboards, and those are retail motherboards. We have like the RS Master Gaming, which was one of my favorite Threadripper boards that I reviewed. You know, it's got heat sinks and backplates, and it's really super overbuilt. But the board itself, while it says gaming in the name, it really supports kind of a workstation workflow sort of situation where we have lots of storage. We have PCI Express 4, so it's really super fast storage. We have multiple PCI Express lanes, so we can run multiple video cards. We can actually do mining on it, I guess, if we really wanted to. But the target market is the people that need to have multi-threaded performance. Most games, and we say that now, even in 2020, most games don't support more than 4 cores.
And if they didn't have 4 cores, that's maybe even lucky.
Yeah. Well, and we have, you know, like what, Cyberpunk 77 or whatever, that probably supports more cores because it's a new game. It's built on a new engine and new sorts of graphic technology. So as the games have started to mature, they support more cores. But Cyberpunk 2077 is also a game you can play in the cloud. You can play it on a console. Consoles don't have 28 cores.
No, they don't.
And the game is going to be optimized for the lowest common denominator. While the Threadripper is awesome and is expensive, I have a hard time rolling it into my main build. I know that I'm not going to get any more motherboards to review. It's kind of fallen out of popularity, because most consumers are just going to go with a lower-end Ryzen. It doesn't support quad-core memory, but you get about half as many cores and a lot better gaming performance because of the optimizations that are put into it and the way that the motherboards are built.
Well, and they're absolutely cheaper and at least a little bit, well, maybe a lot more user-friendly.
I think they're a lot more user-friendly. Well, a lot of the memory overclocks on HardwareBot are set with Ryzen CPUs, so obviously something's good.
I think I'm starting to see a parallel here. The Threadripper is sort of becoming like the Titan. It's a really terrific processor that you probably just shouldn't buy.
Yeah, probably not. Well, and that brings up an interesting point of an article you sent me that we talked about before we started recording, a little offline here.
Oh, yeah, because I saw this article that says that Intel's roadmap, and we talked about the end of life for the 9900K, but What we didn't talk about is there hasn't been an announced new high-end desktop processor, which is unusual with Intel's quasi-TikTok release schedule.
Yeah, they said, we don't do TikTok anymore, and then they kind of did it.
Yeah, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have a title, and this is at Tom's Hardware. Intel roadmap suggests no new high-end desktop processors this year. And I would say probably there's a reason for that.
Okay, let's hear.
Well, we have the LGA 2066. Great platform, quad-core memory, but a lot of the processors you can buy have the same amount of cores as a Comet Lake, like a 10900K. So we have parity between high-end desktop and retail CPUs. And they have equal power, so to speak.
Okay.
I mean, I was testing my Z490 on the dark with my 10900K, and I was playing 7 Days to Die. That machine had a 2080 Super in it. My main machine is a 5960X on an X99 platform, and I have a 2080 Ti Kingpin Edition card in there. I set the detail and specs the same between both games, and I was getting 40 frames a second faster on the Z490.
Huh, okay.
And, you know, my X99 is supposed to be a lot more powerful because of quad channel memory, more cores and stuff like that. Well, it was more powerful in that generation. And now we've gotten to the point where the CPUs have gotten immensely more powerful, which is normal. That's what they're supposed to do. And they're starting to take on the high-end desktop market. So I think the fact that LGA 2066 is rumored to go away, or we're not going to have a new CPU in the next generation, even though we could do like a Comet Lake X, I think this platform might go away in favor of that 3000 LGA CPU that Intel sells to the high-end server market, and EVGA built the SR3 around.
So we could see that trickling down to consumers, you think?
Well, not so much. Here, I'm going to look it up right now. 30, and this is the LGA 3647, and it is a huge processor. It has triple channel memory support. And this was, we talked about this on a podcast where we had the Asus Republica Gamers Dominus Extreme.
Oh, yeah.
Which was an awesome looking motherboard. And it was designed for the workstation version of that CPU. That CPU is basically the size of my hand. It's huge. And it rivals the Threadripper in terms of size. It has a lot more pins on it, but it also supports more memory channels, which is where most of those pins come from. I believe that the LGA 2066 is probably going to phase out because a lot of, you know, enthusiasts would buy this high-end desktop processor. Well, it's having parity with LGA 1200. So there's really no reason to keep it around anymore, especially since we have the LGA 3647 to fall back on.
So right now those are only Xeon processors.
Well, yeah, it's designed for the workstation market, but the high-end desktop market was also designed for the workstation market.
Well, at least they have cool names. Knights Landing, Knights Mill, no more freaking lake names.
Well, we do have a Skylake SP right here.
Oh, yeah.
We do have some Skylake stuff in here. I mean, it's basically the architecture of the CPU that goes and builds it in there, but we need to have a special edition of it, which is the Dash W. That's the workstation version. That allows the processor to be overclocked. It has unlock multipliers, where the Xenons are designed for a server environment where they need to be tightly controlled and locked down. They could also run in SMP mode, so we can have quad CPU servers. So can you imagine that? 4 28-core CPUs all together in one server?
Well, that's pretty awesome. If you could find a way to make it affordable for the home, you'd really be impressive.
Yeah,
oh, wait, scalable architecture.
Scalable. Well, and that's the nature of the LGA 3647 is scalable.
Okay, so I think I get it. But you're not using your Threadripper.
No.
We don't have this new Sky Future Lake 3000 series socket. So what does the future hold for your build? Where are we headed?
Well, I need to have better gaming performance, obviously. I mean, 40 frames per second in 7 Days to Die between a brand new 10-core versus mine, that's unheard of. We can't have that. So I think maybe it's time to start looking at Threadripper and how to make Threadripper cool.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I have all of the cooling parts. I have some really great motherboards. I have some great memory. I got a great video card. Maybe I need a 3090 Kingpin edition. I don't know. We'll have to see. But yeah, we'll have to put together a new plan. Maybe some custom cases, modding, you know, a new painting project. We really need to do that again. It's been a couple of years.
There you go. Well, it sounds like a project that we can check back on very soon. And Threadripper, well, it could be the gaming machine of the future.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes at hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS. Follow us on Twitter or like us on Facebook. This has been a Ninja Lane production, copyright 2020. Thanks for listening.